President Trump issues another stark ultimatum. Now, you may recall he's already done this once, give a 48-hour ultimatum, then moved it to 5 days, then moved it to 10 days, and now here's another one. Now, he doesn't put any kind of a time frame on this one, but it's very, very explicit in what he's talking about and what he's threatening, which, as we're about to see, does not exactly line up with reality on the ground. And I'm going to jump to this one here and show a piece of it here. He writes, this is just hours ago. You see, this is 7:26 this morning. He writes, the United States of America is in serious discussions with a new and more reasonable regime. Well, that sounds good at the beginning. To end our military operations in Greece. Great progress has been made. Awesome. That sounds really cool so far. But if for any reason a deal is not shortly reached, which will probably be the case, and if Hormuz Strait is not immediately open for business, we will conclude our lovely stay. I guess we went from war to excursion to now stay. Lovely stay at that. In Iran, by blowing up and completely obliterating all of their electric generating power plants, oil wells, and Karg Island, and possibly all desalinization plants, which we have not purposely yet touched. This will be in retribution for our many soldiers and others that Iran's have butchered and killed over the regime's 47-year reign of terror. Thank you for your weirdly attention to this matter. Let's go back up to that first part there. We will conclude our lovely stay by blowing up and completely obliterating all of their electric generating power plants, oil wells, Karg Island, and desalinization plants. Let me just categorically state right there, friends, that is a war crime. That is black and white a war crime. You cannot go after somebody, a country, and say we're going to take away your ability to have generating electricity for the population. Only when it has targeted association with a military utility, like something that powers a missile-making factory, something to that effect. But to just generally say we're going to deprive you of all electricity, I mean, that means hospitals, that means grocery stores, schools, everything would be knocked out. People would die, et cetera. So it's categorized as a straight-up war crime. And then to go even more than that, and to say we're going to obliterate all the electric generating power plants and the oil wells and possibly desalinization plants. That's even worse, because now then you're getting at literally the lifeblood of everybody in the Middle East, which is fresh water, drinking water. And I think we've mentioned that Iran relies less on desalinization plants than others in the Middle East. But it would be a serious degradation, which would only target the civilian population. So we need to be very sober-minded about this. Now, I've said this a bit in the past, but man, right here, it needs to be reiterated. The United States has built its greatness as we approach our 250th anniversary on the morality of our country. At least we have attempted to. I know there's been all kinds of dark parts in our history throughout, and our hands have never been completely clean, but there have been, at least we have had the aspiration that we try to achieve these higher goals, that we try to make others accountable for those things, but that we ourselves try to lead the way by example. Then there have been a few good periods in our time where we did that and succeeded. But even in some of the darker times, we've at least had the fiction and we tried to attain that. And we had to have at least enough evidence on the ground to give plausibility to it. I mean, that was always bad, but at least you're doing something that's keeping the lid on. This is in danger of saying the lid is off, the walls are off, the guardrails are gone. Then we will just do whatever we want. We will kill whoever we want, etc. This is not anything about the America that has ever existed before. This is not a minor issue here, folks. Just the fact that he is saying that directly, overtly, and out loud, and at least now it's only been a couple of hours or a few hours now. I haven't seen any kind of pushback here, but we need to. This needs to be addressed for what it is. This is saying we're going to execute a war crime on the population of Iran, which we cannot do. And, of course, it also bears pointing out this is a war that we chose. We were not threatened. There was no imminent threat or any threat whatsoever to the United States. That alone is a huge, major problem. But now you want to complicate it by going somewhere else. But then let's take a look at some other aspects here. We've dealt with the most important thing right off the top, which is the morality of it. But now let's look, even if you take the morality out of it, do we have the wherewithal to actually bring this to fruition where we could win the war on even these draconian terms? I think you already know where this is going. The answer is going to be a decided no, but let me show you why. First of all, though, let me show you one of the other reasons for concern. If President Trump is making that declaration that he's considering openly doing war crimes, when he describes just last night what his probabilities are and his pathways are to try to bring this to a conclusion, there are new issues raised.
I would only say that we're doing extremely well in that negotiation. But you never know with Iran, because we negotiate with them and then we always have to blow them up, whether it's the B-2 bombers or just terminating, as an example, the Iran nuclear deal done by Barack Hussein Obama, probably the worst deal we've ever done as a country, one of the dumbest deals we've ever done. But I terminated it, fortunately, otherwise right now they'd have a nuclear weapon. Then we did the attack with the B-2 bombers and we stopped them from having nuclear. And now we had to blow them up again. And we will probably, I think we'll make a deal with them, pretty sure. Whether it's possible, we won't. But we've had regime change.
I mean, that is so all over the map. Again, and I listen, for any of you who may be big President Trump fans, I can understand some people wanting to, but even if you're a diehard, like you sleep in a MAGA hat, I don't know, take a shower with one, you've got to say, wait a minute, what are you talking about? We have regime change? All we did is assassinate one leader. The entire regime is still the same one in control. President Pezeshkian is still there. The replacement for Khamenei is still there. Even if you've killed a bunch of generals, they just rose up another one. The system has not changed. The parliament is still there. All these things. There is no change in the regime. And then to say, well, I think we're going to get a good deal. Upon what basis? I mean, because the opening session there of that segment where he again brags, we were in negotiations and then we bombed him. And then we were in negotiations again. And then we, to quote him, we had to bomb him again. No, you never had to bomb anything. That was never a situation. And to brag openly about how we negotiated with you, bombed you, negotiated with you, bombed you. And now then we want to say, and I now want another negotiation. What rational thinking person on the planet would ever say, you know what? Sure. Let's go ahead and have another round of negotiations and I'll trust you. And I'll trust you to do what you said, even though just in the last 10 months, 11 months, I guess now, you have twice done it. And now then you're talking about doing it a third time. And no one, even if Assad did the calculation and a balance of power and says, fellas, we can't win this. We're not able to sustain this. We can't go on. They have more bombs and missiles and they have more time than us and we can't do it. It would be nearly suicidal to the extreme for them to say, well, we're going to have to try and trust them again, because it would never work. And probably the person or the leaders who would try and trust again after having already been dogged like that and twisted around and then bragged about in public on camera, I mean, they would be run out of town on a rail and replaced. But they wouldn't. The likelihood is that they would say, even in that case that I drew, they would still say, we're going to fight to the death because there's no point in doing anything else. At least this way, there'd be a chance that maybe we could outlast them and create enough damage and casualties on their side that maybe they would fold or something. I mean, that would be the most logical thing. That's not the case we have here, folks, though. That balance of power, surely looking at the spreadsheets, is way in advantage of the United States and Israel as compared to Iran. But wars ain't fought on a spreadsheet, folks. Wars are fought with capabilities and the circumstances and the time and the geography of the conditions. And the conditions and the objectives that President Trump has set and the resources that we have are not sufficient to meet this. And the Iranian side, as you're going to see here in this episode, have been very meticulous and careful to foresee just this set of circumstances, and they are prepared for an extended period of time. They can sustain this conflict for much longer than we can, which should be ironic. It should be ridiculous, but it's not, because we have been, this is one of the places where our arrogance and our big mouth writing checks that our country can't cash is really starting to come due. And now it's going to cost us a lot. Let's take a look at some of the reasons why I say that. First of all, Trump has just made another unforced error. And if he even thinks he has wants some kind of negotiation, he undercut that again this weekend by saying that he wants Iran's oil, just like he took Venezuela's oil. So there's fresh experience on the ground that anybody in the world would say, look, you give in to President Trump, you're going to lose your resources. So Iran, I mean, they wouldn't have even considered this, but now that they see he's openly saying this is one of his objectives, ergo, there's nothing to negotiate with because all you'd be doing is negotiating your country and your sovereignty completely away. And let's see, I think, yeah, President Trump said, to be honest with you, my favorite thing to do is take the oil in Iran. But some stupid people back in the U.S. say, why are you doing that? But they're stupid people, the president said in an interview over the weekend with Financial Times. That, again, by itself is evidence of a problem. That is not something that any leader in American history has ever done. No leader at all. I mean, unless you're talking about somebody like Nero in Rome or something, or King Lear of old. The kinds of people who are losing it and say things that make no sense at all. We have to, I'm telling you, it is reasonable, it is sober, it is rational to start saying there is something cognitively wrong with the president, to say these things, to be all over the map of saying things that are self-evidently untrue. And if this is the guy that's calling the shots about whether there's going to be a ground incursion here and whether American sons and daughters are about to be sent into a conflict that they cannot win and that will certainly suffer significant casualties and may even outright fail, should alarm everybody. That's unfortunately not where it stops, because it's not just President Trump that's having some of these problems. Let's take a look here, even in Israel. Israel, and this is from the Wall Street Journal. A couple of days ago, Israel is rationing its best interceptors and Iran's missiles are getting through. The country is now having to turn to upgraded versions of less capable munitions to fill the gap. This is, again, something we've been warning about for a while, is that when you get through all the PAC-3s, and because we had so few of them, because we have given so many of them to Israel since 2023, so many of them to Ukraine since 2022, and then now here we've used some last year, and then now a sustained rate in this one, and we just don't have them. Larry Johnson on our show laid out the math for you by going all the way back through all of the data that we've had to where funds have been procured from Congress, and you got the daily rate or the annual rate. You can see approximately how many were ever built and how many have been expended here, and we're getting really close to the end of that. So now it is happening in Israel. They are already having to go to some of the lesser capable, and even the PAC-3s, even some of the Arrow 2s and Arrow 3 interceptors are having a very low rate of interception. So you go to some of these older things. Remember, Ted Postel on our show has talked about some of these older ones and I think PAC-2s and some of the original ones before that, some of them didn't intercept anything at all. There's a reason why we went to the PAC-3, and it is more effective than the PAC-2s and anything earlier, but those were very poor. Now then, that's what you're relying on. Meanwhile, Iran continues to have a sustained rate because they have foreseen this. And let's take a look here. That's not even just the defensive missiles. It's our offensive missiles. According to the Washington Post, 850 Tomahawk launched in Operation Epic Fury is the most fired in a single campaign. You can see on the chart on the left there where this is after a month, folks. This is after a month. Operation Iraqi Freedom that we fought in 2003, Operation Desert Fox, Desert Storm, 288, just a fraction. This is 1 month, actually less than that, when these details came out there. Navy ship, this is from CSIS, Center for Strategic and International Studies. Navy ships and submarines have fired more than 850 Tomahawk missiles in the first 4 weeks of Operation Epic Fury. Replenishing inventory in this campaign will take time and creates near-term risk for the United States. This is one of the things that I was warning about before this, actually going back more than a year, just in what we were doing with the Ukrainian side and the Israeli side after 2023. I said, listen, we have a limited inventory of these high caliber missiles, both offensive and defensive. If we ever got into a situation, I said this so many times, if we got into a situation where we needed them for our own national security, we would be in a world of hurt because we wouldn't be able to sustain it long period of time. And our adversaries would no doubt know that and would do everything they can to make sure that a war turned into a sustained rate of fire. because they would logically, rationally calculate, we can't do that. And now here it is, 1 month in, and that very scenario is already playing out. So upon what basis can President Trump think that we can just go on with this, you know, a 15-round heavyweight body blow kind of thing where each side are trading body blows? We can't go 15 rounds, folks. Iran, is, in this analogy, is the smaller party. They're on the weak end of the heavyweight bout. We're on the topper end, and we've won every bout by a knockout so far, or at least a TKO. But now we can't sustain it. We can't. We didn't work out. We didn't prepare ourselves, and we can't go 15 rounds. The other side has been preparing and training, and they can take your body blows, and they're big. They're major. They're not minor at all. They are really hurting Iran. There's no question about that. But they have a system that can sustain that for a long time. And look, there's been another fresh evidence of this here just recently. U.S. E-3 Century AWACS command and control plane among the damaged aircraft and Iranian attack at Prince Sultan Air Base, according to preliminary information. Now we have video or physical photographic evidence of an AWACS that just completely burned there. In that attack on Prince Sultan Air Base, there were additional aircraft that were hit as well, and some other ones damaged. I think there was some additional tankers. So we're keeping the wraps on all this. We're not admitting anything publicly. But the casualty count, even among our assets, is continuing to go up because our air defenses cannot intercept enough stuff from the enemy. So even with this sustained rate of fire, which is diminished from what it started off, somewhere between 10 and 20 missiles per day in most cases, sometimes it spikes up a little above that. But the Iranian side has what I've been telling you about from the beginning, because it's just common sense and logical that they had a sustained rate of fire because they want to drag this out multiple months, concluding exactly what we're starting to see now would happen, in that we would lose the ability to intercept, even at a diminished rate. And now here, even an AWACS plane has been hit. Already we have vacated 13 bases. 13 of our bases are now so damaged that we can't even operate from them. And now we have to do this. I think the headline that we showed last week was basically distance working, where you're operating from a distance. And so everything is being accelerated and expanded, meaning the cost of flying, we're using more aircraft hours, we're using more tankers, meaning we're using more fuel, we're wearing out our crews more, et cetera, and we have to go further back because this is what happens if you keep them at Prince Sultan Air Base. And that's only going to continue to happen. We can't stop them. There's a reason why that was hit. We intercept some things. We have some success, but you see right there, I mean, it's as graphic as it can be. Meanwhile, now, what do you think that the Iranian side is going to do? Do you think that given the fact that they have prepared for a 15-round decision that they're going to go for, that they're taking all these body blows so far, and their training and their preparation has so far worked pretty good, and then Trump comes in with this claim here, we're going to commit a war crime against you if you don't give us what we want. Now, what do you think that they're going to say? Well, let's go to the chief diplomat for the Iranian side, Abbas Araghchi, and see what he had to say yesterday. He said, Israel and its partner in crime believe that knowledge can be bombed away. This is specifically in refer to whether we can get rid of their nuclear program, which President Trump said is his top priority. It's reflected in the murders of Iran scientists and attacks on Iran's nuclear sites and now universities. We have been attacking universities again, along with Israel inside of Iran. Apparently, that's the new way of war. They, by the way, just kind of as an aside, the Iranian side has said that now then they would put Western universities in the region on the target list. We'll see if they actually do. But based on the fact that we have been hitting them, they said that's now an open target. Then he continues on. Reality check. Your action ooze of desperation and only inspire more pursuit of knowledge and thereby resistance as well. So you can see that it is a logical, rational thing for, in this case, on the spreadsheet, the weaker power to say, no, we're going to continue fighting this war for an extended period of time because we can and you can't. And instead of recognizing this, and there's no question in my mind that there are people in the Pentagon, there are people in the White House that are telling President Trump everything I'm saying right here, probably more things. They probably know even more of the vulnerabilities than I do. And they're saying, sir, we can't do this. We cannot get into a 15-round fight. We just don't have the sustainability. We can't do it. And if we try, it's going to cost us a great deal. And at some point, we're going to lose the ability to intercept virtually anything, and they'll have free reign and can hit anything that they want to. Even if they only fire 10 to 20 a day, like 8 to 14 of them are going to get through. And then they'll start hitting more and more important targets, and we'll just be bleeding to death. And so then we'll have to eventually either withdraw everything from the region here because we have to get it out of missile range or lose it all. And then, of course, you're going to have a victory. You're going to have loss. Now, meanwhile, of course, all during this time, now with all these, you know, we're maybe in the third round of a 15-round fight for the year, as far as the Iranians are concerned. But that price of oil, folks, is still going up. Let me see if I got that still handy. What is the current rate here? This is Brent crude oil. It's currently trading at 112. It's actually down a little bit today, but that's still way too high. It's way above $100, and it's going to continue to do that for a long time. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the evidence coming out is showing that we are going to be in increasing trouble because a lot of the consequences are building up right now. Some of them are already too late. If the war magically ended this afternoon, a lot of these problems have already built up, and they're unwinding into problems that's going to cause a lot of challenges in Europe and in Asia, in addition to the Middle East here. And there's problems all over the place. But it's not ended today, magically or otherwise, and it's continuing on. And at the core of all this, one of the reasons why the Iranian side is able to have these body blows is because they looked forward to this day and they expected this kind of shots, and they built over decades before this. They have prepared for this day. We've talked about it a little bit, but there's some new information out today which puts some details and some numbers on it, which I think are really, really important. This article here says Iran's underground missile bases are immune to attack. So when you keep hearing the Pentagon spokesman or Secretary of War Admiral Cooper of CENTCOM saying, you know, oh, we've knocked them down 80%. We've knocked almost all their missiles out, et cetera. This is the reality. A CNN investigation identified at least, 27 such of these underground bases, 27, including at least 107 tunnels with exits. Now, here's the key part. 77% of those openings were hit by Israel and U.S. aircraft in the first 3 weeks of the operation. However, the investigation made a disturbing finding. This is something we predicted as well because it's common sense. Within a day or two, engineering vehicles were identified near these entrances engaged in their rapid restoration. One of the more better known was a missile base near Yazd. I'm going to show you that in a second. In central Iran, was bombed twice during the operation's opening week and then again last week. And they have the resilience to continue firing. Now, I'm going to show you something really graphic here, not in a negative sense of graphic, so you can see, you can get a really good understanding of why this is a problem to get this. Remember, there are 27 of these. So here's the Strait of Hormuz. You're used to seeing that. And Karg Island is up here, Gulf of Oman. Let me show you where this Yazd missile base is here. We'll zoom in this area right here. And this is the city of Yazd. Sorry, Yazd, to be specific. And then there's this mountain range. Let me see if I get the right one. Yeah, this apparently this right here, let me show you the 3D version of this so you can get a really good sense. This is the mountain range where these one of these missile bases is hidden. And if you can zoom in a lot, so you can see that this is some really, really powerful rock here. So by all accounts, this is where one of the major missile bases is for the Iranian side. And they have buried it inside. So this is not just concrete. You know, it's not just deep under the ground, but it's in this granite type rock here that makes it nearly impossible to penetrate through. Now let me show you a cutaway of what that facility looks like. This is the Yazd Granite Fortress, and why destroying Iran's missile metro, as they call it, is practically impossible. So I just showed you where that mountain was. Now here's a cutaway. This is what's going on inside. There's entire rail systems underneath there. And we don't even know for sure how far they go. I mean, we don't know if that's just within the mountain system itself, if there's others, et cetera. But you see that, you know, there are some of these that fire out, and on the left side there, you can see the lower left side, you see one of the missiles coming out And that's kind of where some of them come out. So we've bombed some of these entrances, but they get them. They have engineering teams that get them repaired. You see that the missiles striking there on the upper left-hand side, they're just hitting the side of the mountain, and all it does is shake, probably makes a little dust fall on the inside, but it's so deep under this granite rock that the missiles do nothing but scratch the surface, and you don't even notice it inside. It doesn't do anything at all. And then there's also, on top of that, we have the issue of the exit tunnels in other places, sometimes in open desert, sometimes in the side of mountains, where it'll just come out of nowhere, seemingly out of nowhere, because they have missile silos that are no longer like used to be in the past, where it was identifiable from space and you had the exit, the tunnel there, and you could see where the missile would come out. You bomb that, the thing's knocked out. Now then you don't even know where they are, because they have gotten really clever at hiding that. And then even in the ones here, and listen, this is something that's normal and throughout modern history. I mean, especially in World War II, there was all kinds of cities that were bombed. And that's when, like, the Germans and the Japanese both, they had a lot of their, I guess all of their facilities, or the most part, were above ground, and they were hit often. But then when they're hit, they're repaired and they're replaced. And even in this situation here, when you've been hitting runways, again, going back to World War II, especially, you know, we would hit airfields and knock out airfields. And then there's teams, and we had the same was done to ours. And we had engineering teams that would go out and repair them. We have engineering teams in the Air Force right now that are specifically trained that when airfields get hit, that you go out there and within hours, you can get the things an emergency repair back, so it's functional and operational. That's just a common part of warfare. But because we have mocked the Iranians and said, well, they're not smart, they can't do it, if you hit something and take it out, then it's it, and you just marked off the calendar, and then all we got to do is just service all these targets, get enough of them knocked out, and bam, they'll fall apart. Except they don't, because they have the wherewithal, they have the intelligence, and they have the wisdom that they have prepared for all this stuff, to include the resources and the trained material to be able to fix it. So even when you can identify some of the tunnels, because some of these tunnels in these facilities, you have to bring out a mobile launcher from inside the mountain to get the thing to fire and then take it back inside. It's always a race against time. But you can identify where some of these tunnel exits are. Apparently, we've identified up to 107 specifically. And you can go and you bomb those, and we have, but then they're trained to repair that damage, bring the next one out, and do it, et cetera. And there's nothing you can keep on hitting those things over and over. And I mean, you're going to wear yourself out with bombs, but I guess it's theoretically possible, presuming that you keep the air defense safe. But then it's a matter of time if you can get them before the next missile goes out. And because they have at least 27 of these, 31 by another count, I mean, you just don't have that many bombs. You see what I'm saying here, folks? We've set ourselves up for something that just can't be militarily won. And now then, according to all the information out over the weekend, we are seriously considering two incredibly risky missions. One of them, and I've sent a lot of this out on X. You can go and check a lot of the details I sent out over the weekend that talked about some of the details of this. But we're thinking maybe we'll take, of course, Kargil, and that's what everybody talks about. There's also Kashim Island. Now, apparently, Bandar Abbas, which is the most ridiculous idea. Maybe we'll take that because, yes, you're looking at a map. It would be cool to have it. Well, fine. It's cool. But can you do it? Bandar Abbas is on the mainland. That's not an island, which means the defense of it would be even easier. Reinforcements would be even easier for Iran to come. And as we've shown you, they've been mobilized in the reserves, and now they're up to somewhere around 1 million-plus forces of total that are available. So if you want to do something on the mainland, I mean, that's the most absurd thing, because they actually can bring firepower. And again, all of the terrain around there favors the defense in a big and massive way. So that's one level of thing. And there's some other targets that are also being considered on the land, on the border around in the Kurdistan area. I don't know why you think that's going to work. And again, the total number of ground troops that have been even talked about so far, and that's Marines, 82nd Airborne, and some special forces, and now some additional that have not been identified, another 10,000, some other infantry type ground troops. And so for a total of less than 20,000, 17,000 at least is the number publicly talked about, that has even been alerted for mobilization, not there yet. Only a few of them are there. Still, the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit is not on site yet. That is, I cannot enforce this enough. That is a relative tiny number of ground troops to do anything on the ground there, whether it's up in the Kurdistan area, whether it's anywhere on the coast of Iran, in the Persian Gulf, in the Gulf of Oman, in the Strait of Hormuz, any of those things. It just would nearly be suicide to even make the attempt. And now then, apparently, there's yet another even more crazy idea. Let's send in some teams to actually go and get the nuclear material from wherever it may be. Maybe we have intelligence that says where some of it is. I can tell you that it's just as almost an absolute certainty that they're not stupid, and they've shown that they're not stupid in any of these other preparations, that they're going to spread out these material, and they'll have them in multiple locations, 3, 4 maybe. I mean, why would you put it in one position to where you have a single point of failure, or even just get it destroyed or something like that? They wouldn't do that. I can't even imagine they did. But even if they did, or even if you could find it, the ability to go and get that inside the country, I mean, that is just insane. And let's just take a look at that again. Let me go back to the map and just kind of reinforce this here. Let me shift back to the 2D version, and let's just go and look. All right, so anywhere you want to talk about where such an incursion would be, and we'll just take Isfahan, because that's where certainly the nuclear facilities we know is Isfahan. That's in the middle here. So just look, first of all, here's Isfahan. And you can see how far that away is from the Persian Gulf and how far away it is from any place you could start. Even if somehow you could coerce the country of Iraq to say, we're going to stage on yours and then we're going to have an air insertion. We're going to go all the way into Isfahan. Let's see, even from the Iraqi border. So you're talking 300 miles. You understand that? 300 miles from that position right there. Let's see what it would be from Kuwait. See if we got a strong arm to Kuwait and then to go to Isfahan. Again, almost 300 miles. So you would say, we're going to take, and this has to be helicopters. You can't do this you don't have anywhere to land. You can't bring in some of these big fighters. So you're gonna have to bring in helicopters, whether that's Chinooks, Blackhawks, V-22 tilt rotors, et cetera. You're going to have some combination of that going over all this territory. And you know, because we've been talking about it, it's been in the open source all the time, that both China and Russia are helping Iran with intelligence. Iran has its own. They have their own strategic assets. They have drones that can see things. They have satellites. People don't know that. So they've got the ability. They would see this coming before it happens, and they would already know it's going to come, so they certainly would have some preparation. You get slow-moving aircraft like that have to cover 300 miles in enemy territory, the chances of any of them getting through is remote. I would wager that you might not get any of them in there, but for sure, you're going to lose some. So that means you're going to be weakened when you get there. Somehow, you're going to have to insert these troops on the ground there where it's going to be heavily defended, where they have looked forward to this, and they have probably multiple levels under the ground, and they probably have defenses at each one of the level, and they certainly would have defenses all around the entrance, and then they would have in some of the mountainous areas around there where they would have long-range artillery and everything else that could just rain death and destruction for a long period of time on it to just make it nearly impossible. That's easy to figure out. It's easy to foresee that they would do that because they would expect us to try something like that, and they would have assets. And that's if it was only in one place. It would be a nearly impossible task. And that's if it is at Isfahan. I mean, they could have put it further back into the country. They could have moved it around. There's lots of evidence that before the Operation Midnight Hammer last year, that they had already moved that stuff out of some of these containers. Other reports say no, that they left it in there and it's been buried under the rubble. Who knows? But one way or the other, wherever it is, it's going to be incredibly well defended, but that apparently is on the table. That again just shows you what in the hell is going on in the White House and the Pentagon. What kind of leaders do we have up there? And Gary, I think, do you still have that one? I do want to show one here. General McKenzie. Yeah, I see that's loaded up down there. Here's part of the problem. This is a former Central Command who is going to give a very upbeat and optimistic point here. This is what he's saying publicly, at least.
This is a part of a plan that's been in existence for many years. What we're doing right now is we're reducing Iranian ability to target ships in the Strait through their short-range missiles, their drones, and other activities. We do that by maintaining air superiority over southern Iran on a 24/7 basis, looking for where these missiles are and striking them relentlessly. Once we reduce those to a very low level, then you'll be able to go in, if necessary, sweep for mines. I'm not certain they put mines in the water yet. I predict eventually they will. It's their nature. But we have the ability to do this. We're on plan. I'll be honest with you, Margaret. I've simulated this many years in many positions at Central Command. We're a little further along than we would have expected to be at this point in all the simulations that I've seen.
Oh, my God. Are you serious? We're ahead of plan? Yeah, we've foreseen this. 850 Tomahawks in a bloody month. That's what you want to say. They're immune to your attack. You said we're treating them, we're taking them out of way. Once we get them down to a certain level, we'll be able to get them out. Here's the mountain, the granite complex that's virtually impossible, practically is impossible to take down. And then now here's a former four-star general wants to make the case. We are on the way to doing this. We're ahead of schedule. I mean, if he's just saying that for public consumption because that's echoing something President Trump said, shame on him for lying to everybody. If he's saying it because he believes it, holy crap. This is the caliber of people we have in charge of the military? Because believe me, these four stars, these admirals and generals, they replicate themselves. They make sure that before they leave, they get their handpicked people in to replace them that think just like they do. And if this is the caliber of people that are advising President Trump, hell, he may believe some of this crazy stuff he's saying. He may think that we can do it. Even though graphically depicted in front of your face after now 30-something days of war, you can see that Iran is in a stronger position and is able to weather all of these shots and has a sustained rate of fire that, by all accounts, is going to continue on indefinitely, at least for the foreseeable future. Not indefinitely, not forever. There's an end to it at some point, but apparently we're running out of the important things before they do. So, wow. You just have to wonder what in the world is going on here. And, of course, none of that gives us any kind of a hope for anything to come, any kind of a near-term solution, because the Iranian side would be foolish to do. We're like in round three of a 15-rounder. We're out of shape, and we're already sucking down wind. I don't know what's going to happen in rounds four and five, and God help us if we try to do a sucker punch by taking some of this uranium. It could be lights out. We could be the ones that suffer a knockout even before we get to the fifth or sixth round. We'll continue to watch this, folks. Do have some additional things here. Is Iran the new forever war? With German writer Patrick Bob, who's going to be with us today, he's going to take a look at some of the issues going on from the European side. A lot of it's been going on over. We've been focusing a lot on the U.S. and Iranian side, but there's a lot that's going on our allies in Europe as well. He'll have that. And then Trita Parsi today will be looking at what are things looking like from the Iranian side. What do they have to say about this? And or do we see any cracks that could be exploited there? He'll be bringing all that this afternoon. So that's at 12 o'clock and at 2 o'clock. We will see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.